So more inflation, more taxes, less social programs is the only way out of this mess. The
Yeah.
question is, are there any Democrats or Republicans who are willing to say that to the public?
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Hello, welcome back to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. And today we have Anna Kelly again. This is part two of the episode with Anna Kelly. If you didn't hear last week's episode, listen to that one first. We dive into a ton of awesome information. Anna is just totally bringing it. And we're going to continue today with the remainder of that episode. So tune in. It's an excellent episode. Again, listen to last week's episode first before you listen to this. You're going to love it.
I want to just say this because I do get a little irritated at the people like ganging up on every single operator that has a property in distressed. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, there was some bets taken that in hindsight were not good bets. Like we talked about, they took the risk of bridge debt. I said, I'll never do bridge debt because I learned from it before. But again, I did a variable deal with a rate cap. So a lot of people took bridge debt because they're doing 2 to 3 year value adds. And if they locked in the rates for 5 years and rates fell, which everybody said they were going to, they have multi-million dollar prepayment penalties that their investors would have to pay.
Correct.
So they thought that, well, if I get variable, but then I get a rate cap, I'll be safe. Well, we figured out that that's not true because the rate cap insurance went up from, you know, some deals, you know, I have one, for example, that was 40,000 when we bought it, less than 40, was going to renew at $1 million. Like nobody anticipated that, right?
I mean, so, that's $1 million swing, right? It just,
yeah,
you can't
and
predict
your
that.
Cash flow, because it's now escrowed from your investors' payouts, right? So nobody anticipated that, whether you're a broker or a REIT or a small syndicate or whatever. So what I'm saying is if you did those deals in 2021 and you did a 2 year bridge debt with a 1 year extension, like this year's the 1 year extension, right? Yeah. But a lot of this stuff was done in 2022. And so, you know, 2 years is 2024, the 1 year extension, if they can get it's 2025. But even if they get the extension, if the debt coverage ratio is no longer met or the LTV, they may lose their properties. And I have friends who are going to lose a property or two. They're great operators. Their NOI is great. Their properties are performing well. But that cap rate is just not changing. And so, you know, I am hopeful that if rates fall this year, as I think that they're going to more dramatically than most think they're going to because of a recession, is that they'll be able to survive if they can wait past that rate drop, maybe this summer. And then figure out how to bring in rescue capital, whether they've got to bring in, you know, a large company that's going to go in, you know, senior position or mezz debt or something like that, if they can't refi. But I don't think this is the end because those that, you know, bought in 2024, they can extend into 2025 with a 1 year extension. And I think you're still going to see a lot of fallout in 2024 and 2025.
Yeah.
Even rates coming down will help, but they won't completely resolve the issue.
Yeah, it's easy in hindsight to say, well, that was a stupid move. But the thing that people forget about is that it was a smart move to put in floating rate debt for the last 10 years. Like if you put floating rate debt on over the last 10 years, you made the right hedge.
Right.
And so it's hard to all of a sudden change that thought and go, hey, today is the day that I do fixed rate debt and I no longer do floating rate debt. Cause today is the day, yesterday it wasn't, but today is now the new day that I have to put in fixed rate debt.
Right. Cause things don't change suddenly. These things change over a couple of years. And the Fed came out in January, I think of 2022 and said, inflation is transitory. We're not going to raise rates.
Yes.
And every broker and every real estate broker, every mortgage lender told operators the Fed's not going to raise rates. So they're not going up. You know, if you feel better, we'll sell you this rate cap policy for 40 grand. Right. And I did that just in case, because I've learned you never know. But a lot of people didn't. And even if you did, again, it's still you did the smart move.
And they're only
you
for
thought,
a couple of years. Right. So
you never think. Right. no one anticipated after the inflation issue, there's going to be more wars. And then there's going to be, you know, all kinds of other things going on as well. So it's easy to point blame in the end. And we have to learn from every time these things happen. What it's done to me personally, it's made me even more cautious going forward, right? I'm paying down more debt than I've ever paid. You couldn't pay me to pay down debt when I could leverage that debt, you know, borrow at 3 or 4 and invest to make 20. Today, I'm going, you know what? I think that the global risks of more things falling apart, let's say China goes after Taiwan. I'm just going to use that. Yeah. Like if that happens while Russia's in Ukraine and Israel's fighting the Middle East, like, you know, who knows? Or we have some kind of terrible internal civil war because of who gets in the White House in November. Like that's, those kind of things have far more impact on rates. And the other thing is, it's not just inflation, Todd. It's people think all the rates are high because of inflation. Part of it is we have so much government debt that for people to buy treasuries, they need a higher rate. So even if inflation comes down more than it has today, and I think it will, once we have a recession and it's over with, let's say I'm wrong and we have no recession and all these really smart people, smarter and older than I am, are wrong too, and we have no recession, or the government dumps helicopter money at us again to keep us, to keep us out of it. They rescue the banks when they start to fail later this year, because more banks are starting to fail because of commercial real estate faltering. That's a whole nother elephant in the room. They may rescue the banks again. They always do. They're not going to save the syndicator. They're going to save, you know, the banks. But even if they do all of that, we will have so much national debt that while I think we will have low rates and a recession in the short term, I think that in order for other countries and U.S. investors to buy treasuries, which they need to do to help pay down the debt, the interest offered is going to have to be so much higher that treasuries could go right back up. And we celebrate as multifamily for a couple of years because we refinanced everything. But if treasuries go back right up, guess what's going to happen to multifamily and any commercial values again? The cap rates are going to go up and values are going to fall again. So, you know, I think that there's pain ahead. We have to be really careful about. We could be rescued, but what I'm going to do is, as soon as rates do fall from either deep recession or banking crisis or both, which I think is going to happen, I'm going to buy as much as I can and lock in 10-year fixed rate debt and hold those properties 10 years. Yeah. And I'm doing less value add deals because I think there's too many things outside of my control. And this is just me. This is the conservative me who's lived through big shocks 3 times, GFC, COVID, and then now the last couple of years with interest rates. I'm going to own more stuff that I hold long-term, lock in for long periods of time, and continue to force value as I can and maybe do some cash out refis, but hold properties instead of value adding, because that's what worked really well for a decade. I think the value add major reposition, when I can't control in cap rate because of whatever's happening outside my control, treasury rates, where inflation's going to be, offshoring, you know, re-onshoring stuff is going to cause inflation to go up and rates to go up. If I can't control the cap rate, or at least reasonably expect where the cap rate's going to be, and governments are now anticipating right now in Congress, national rent controls, I've got taxes that are absolutely going to go up because we have too much debt. The Fed has to raise taxes after the election. They will, regardless of the party. Insurance costs are skyrocketing. So when my NOI is harder to control from just taxes, insurance, and rent controls, and my cap rates are harder to control, it's going to make me rethink, what is my true exit price? Where's the cap rate going to be? Where's my NOI going to be? I'm going to just be a little more conservative and go back to more cash flow investing. Yep. And then all the upside is the gravy on top. So that's kind of how I'm looking at things and where my mindset is. I probably could be more risky, and I'm sure I will find a couple of deals that are great value adds that I can get in and out. But I just think thinking long-term is what makes more sense in a coming maybe era, maybe decade of more, more uncertainty and more risk.
It was funny. I just recorded a solo episode where I talked about the differences between short term, you know, fixing and flipping a multifamily, and long term. Yeah. And I said a lot of what you just said is like, right now we're in a time where it's flatline, maybe going down, but we're certainly not going to see a skyrocketing pricing or anything, at least in my opinion. And so now is a great time to be on, put your long-term hat on. Buy these properties, get long-term fixed rate debt as long of term as you can get, and just count on holding through a cycle. And if all of a sudden values skyrocket, go ahead and sell. That's fine.
Right.
But count on this being long-term, because I feel like we're in a season as well where we're going to need to hold on to our properties a little bit longer to make the returns that we want to get. And it makes a lot of sense. So
we've
been doing a lot of what you said, buy well-located properties, a little bit newer buildings, sure, maybe a little bit of value add, but it doesn't rely on massive value add in order to get the returns you're expecting.
That's the key. And, you know, I think to that point, like we talked a little bit before we recorded the show, you know, you're in Minnesota and, you know, that being a good market, I own about 300 units between myself and me and two partners that are long-term holds. So we've got, you know, 10 year plus debt on those that are in central Pennsylvania. And it's not a sexy market. Nobody's chasing deals in Hershey, Pennsylvania, right? But we have such a lack of supply and a really high barrier to entry. So it's really hard to get approval for construction. So because we have great incomes and we have really low supply, it allows us to do really well. We're like 99% occupied all the time. Awesome. But that's not that way in every market. So, you know, where you invest is really important. You know, it was really sexy to invest in the Sun Belt. And I'm from Texas. I love Texas. Yes, I think everything's better in Texas, but it was overbuilt, you know, in certain markets too. And I have a couple properties in Dallas and in Houston, where the oversupply, that it was undersupplied because of Hurricane Harvey that had been in Houston a few years ago. And then suddenly certain parts are oversupplied. So you want to be in areas that have a really balanced supply and in conservative areas where rent caps are less likely to hit you. The federal government is looking at, again, kind of this national rent caps, but they're really focused on helping the people below median income. So like if I'm looking at properties, I either want to be in Class A areas, and I still like Class B properties in Class A areas because they're not at the top. People aren't going to move down. You know, they're going to want to stay where they are. But the other thing that I'm thinking more about, which I got totally out of a few years ago and said I'd never do again, I've shifted a little bit, is offering some Section 8 housing in those nice areas, because the government is going to pay my rents and they're going to keep them, you know, full. So sometimes you stay in what you're doing. Like, I'm still a believer in multifamily, Todd, and I'll always buy multifamily. People need a place to live, and nationally we are undersupplied. You got to go in the right markets that have, you know, conservative rules. They're not going to do your rent increases, either Class A or government in nice areas, but also in areas where they have strong GDP. Because even if the nation is in a recession, there are certain states and cities who are, their GDP is much better than nationwide, and they'll continue to do well. So, you know, I'm looking at those great locations, the same fundamental rules as before: great location, great tenant pool, good incomes, low taxes, low legislative, you know, risk, and then just hold your properties longer. And if the timing works out to sell soon, great. But if not, I'm looking forward to a time when rates fall, when some distress comes and I can pick up properties for cheaper than I've been able to the last couple of years, put some good long-term financing on it, and then, you know, ride up the next wave and find your pockets of return in a decade that I would argue is going to be harder to make money than it was the decade before COVID.
Man, I literally have like 10 more questions I need to ask you, but it's,
well, let's do it.
We've been going for a long time. Do you have time to continue?
Of course.
I have a little bit of time. I'd love to keep going.
Yeah.
Maybe not 10, but maybe like another few minutes here. So
sure.
I want to, Just keeping down this kind of rabbit hole, we have, you know, you talk about this recession that's maybe coming. My thoughts that keep coming to my mind when I think about a recession and when it'll come and if it'll come and how severe it is well, it's things are different now than they've been before. That's always the case.
Sure.
There's, to me, these the big unknowns that are so much different are we have such a global economy that we've never had before. Right. I mean, even in 2008, it wasn't nearly what it is today.
No.
And then our government printed trillions of dollars of money. And like you said, just took the helicopters out and went, here you go. Who wants this money? I mean, I don't know about you, but my household kept on receiving government checks. And I'm like, I don't want this money. Stop giving it to me.
Yep.
And it's
absolutely.
Yeah. So to me, those are events or changes that have happened that affect how the next recession plays out. And then we also have a presidential election. And I feel, and I don't want to get too political because I don't love getting political.
Right. Oh, me either.
And I don't know where you land on the political spectrum, mm-hmm. and I don't care, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But we are going to have an election. I feel like we've got just so much more hatred towards each candidate, and mm-hmm. it's likely going to be Donald Trump and Joe Biden as we sit here in February.
Lord help us.
Okay, I agree. But either way, that's what it's going to be. And mm-hmm. And there's so much hatred towards each of them.
Yeah.
And it's just, these are all driving factors, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at, and where this economy is going to go. I don't know if you have thoughts on what I just said. If you do.
Sure, I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to make another just recommendation for somebody that really has a good pulse on this. And it doesn't matter if you agree with them on everything, because I don't on everything, but I really have been really deep diving into the work of Ray Dalio and principles mm-hmm. of dealing with the changing world order and principles of dealing with big debt cycles. Yeah. And one of the things, there's also a guy named Neil Howe that wrote a book called The Fourth Turning that believes we're in a fourth turning. And essentially, I'll try to summarize this succinctly, and I'm not going to do it very good justice, but over several decades, history repeats itself. Companies become the big international player. They create the new main trading system, international system, monetary system, although it's become more and more complex over time. And essentially, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. It creates more wealth divides. It creates more political divides and more divides over, the haves and the have-nots, whether that's corporations and small businesses or the rich and the poor, then you start getting some polarization. And over time, governments spend more and more and more money on social programs. They get more involved in businesses and people's lives, and they take on too much debt. And once governments take on too much debt, guess what it does? It causes inflation. And inflation is the poor man's tax. It's a tax that you don't understand is really taxing you. It chips away at your wealth and at your income and at your cost of living over many, many years. And finally, it rears its ugly head when governments spend too much money. Does that sound like where we might be today?
Yeah.
And what happens is it creates internal turmoil between everybody over every issue. And you get polarization in the governments and you have one party against the other. And eventually there becomes civil war. And if that's happening at the same time that you're taking on massive amounts of debt to fund these programs, and again, it's happened over hundreds and hundreds of years, just, one was gold backed, one was the Dutch mark backed, one was UK money, one's American, it doesn't matter. But the basic premise happens that you get massive amounts of debt, there become these wealth gaps, civil wars. And if you have external wars happen at the same time, and you have another superpower that wants to rise up, then it's really difficult for governments to function well and to pay off their debt. And that's when most nations and a new superpower rises up. So if you look at that pattern, we're falling in exactly this pattern. And the Neil Howe on The Fourth Turning basically says, each generation gets a little bit wealthier and then these gaps start and then it starts to reverse too much debt. And then you have this fourth turning when the whole system is reset. Well, you've got the globalists, and I watch the UN very carefully. I watch the World Economic Forum. I watch what they're saying. They all want to get America out of the picture, start a new financial system, great reset. You know, we talked about post-COVID. I could talk about that for hours on a different show, but it's pretty fascinating. And there are countries, let's just say Russia and China, what's obvious, that want to replace the U.S. as the world dominant power. The Middle East, they're working on euro dollars and the BRICS currencies and all of that. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. But all these things to say, the government, the U.S. is in a classic big debt cycle that generally will either end in a company losing its dominant place on the world power, which will hurt economies globally, cause some type of major internal friction. We kind of saw, you know, January 6th, whatever party you're on, you know, you've got these people that are willing to like take over the government, right? Now you've got people, I am concerned after this election of what happens no matter who gets elected. Is there some kind of civil, you know, worse civil uprising? I think we're vulnerable as United States. With that said, when governments get in so much debt, so the internal fighting is one piece, but when governments get in as much debt as we're in, and there's no end in sight, they basically always only have a couple of tools to get out of it. Our debt right now, our debt payments alone are $1 trillion a year. It's more than what is available for military. And when you're helping fight proxy wars, whatever you want to call them, you know, two or three at one time, and we can't even afford to fund that or our military, the governments do want a couple of things. One is austerity. They cut social programs. We're already talking, regardless of what side you're on, that we don't have enough money to support Social Security. You know, in 10 years, it's going to be out. So how do we back off Social Security, bring it down, whatever? Well, that'll create big fights, you know, between the left and the right. The next thing is they got to produce austerity. They start cutting social programs. They got to balance the budget. Number two is they raise taxes significantly. They have to, because they've got too much debt. That creates more, you know, friction between the left and the right, the haves and the have nots. And then they create inflation on purpose, because it's cheaper to pay off debt with money that's worth less in the future than it is to pay it off with money that's worth more today. So more inflation, more taxes, less social programs is the only way out of this mess. The question is, are there any Democrats or Republicans who are willing to say that to the public? No, because they won't get reelected, because the public wants their cake and eat it too. We're wealthy. We don't want to pay taxes. You know, that's what bonus depreciation is about. The new tax bill that just got passed in the House, it hasn't gone through Senate yet, I don't think, is giving us back 100% bonus depreciation. Right. Woohoo! And it's also, you know, increasing some tax credits. And so, you know, we have to get politicians on the left and the right to work together, which is harder and harder in a polarized world, that will say we have a debt problem. We need to raise taxes. We need to cut spending. We need to lower inflation. So hopefully we don't inflate away everybody's money. I don't have a whole lot of hope that that's going to happen. So I'm a conservative independent, but I don't think the U.S. is on a good path, Todd. And those things do, again, make me say lots of things are outside of our control. It depends on who gets elected in Congress and, you know, in the White House. And I've got to invest for the long term, and I've got to be well diversified, because to me, it doesn't look as promising for my kids. I have four kids that are, you know, 12 to 20, and I worry about the next decade or two decades for them as they're trying to grow and maintain wealth and just support their families. I think it's going to be harder than it was for you and I.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's just easier for the politicians to kick the can down the road and just to kind of ignore the situation than to actually face it too. I think beyond just getting reelected, it's just easier to ignore the problems at hand and just go on your day to day. And, you know, it's like, I agree. Like, look, our kids' future, but what I would say is that if you prepare your kids right, and there's always opportunity in no matter what situation there is. So if your kids are prepared the right way and their mindsets are set up the right way, they're going to be able to succeed regardless of what's going on in the U.S. There's always going to be opportunity. It might be harder times, certainly. And buckle up. I think you're probably right on a lot of these things. And I don't feel like the whole thing's going to burn down, but I agree.
And here's the thing. We're the worst sweaty. We're like the least sweaty shirt in a closet full of sweaty shirts, right? Yeah. Like all the countries are facing the same issue. So we still, you know, are very blessed to live in America. You know, we still have a lot of opportunity compared to most countries. And to your point, there will always be opportunity. It's preparing. It's not saying this is a short-term problem. You know, what I'm trying to get to is not like negativity, doom and gloom, but it's for people that think, oh, as soon as rates come back down, it's going to be the same. It's going to go back to normal. No, it's not. We've got new challenges for the next 10 years that are different than inflation, right?
Yeah.
That might be a part of it. But to your point, there's been economic challenges and even before great resets, you know, in every single economy, and people have made a ton of money if you understand what to do. And that's why, you know, learning diversification, learning to understand and mitigate risk, you know, being humble enough to say there's things that I don't know. And then, you know, having some cash on the side, investing with other people that are conservative, that are smart, that can find these pockets of opportunity is really important. You know, you will continue to do well if you do all those things right.
Yeah. I mean, you can't bury your head in the sand, right?
Right.
If you're going to be doing that, then just get what you get.
Yeah. Everybody right. thought the sky was going to fall when, you know, either Obama or Romney were elected, and then, you know, Trump or Hillary, and then it's, you know, Biden and who knows, maybe Trump. Like, the sky never falls quickly, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, you can't make money if you're a total pessimist and bury your head in the sand. So I look at myself as an optimist. I'm always looking for opportunity. But I think it's important in an era of gurus. Let me just say this, because when times get tough, everybody becomes an expert and sells a program and acts like they can teach you to do it the same way they learned 2 years ago in a world that's changing. So be realistic. Listen to economists that tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly so that you're a wiser investor and can make wiser decisions without being blindsided by what might come in the economy. But you can say, I'm learning enough about the economy that now I can take some really good, broad views of things and not just say, I'm a good multifamily operator. Here's NOI, here's cap rates, and then close your eyes to the rest of it. Because I learned the better I think I am as an operator or an investor, the more risk I have to, you know, not seeing the big picture. So, you know, learn the economy. I listen to a show. I love your podcast, by the way, for just economic stuff. Adam Taggart with Thoughtful Money is a really good resource. He has a lot of economists that come on that talk about macro and micro and, you know, risks and opportunities and things like that as well. So I'm enjoying listening to that.
It's funny. I listened to that one too.
Good.
And you know, there's been plenty of negativity, but I think it's more or less not trying to be negative. It's about trying to be aware and be realistic and understanding. Right. And you're not all negative either. And I would say I'm not either. You are developing, you're building a property right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not like you're just sitting there doing nothing. You're developing a property. Tell me why you decided to develop a property. You did tell us that there's been overbuilding and
absolutely.
So, but you are now developing a property. Why? Why is it?
Yes. So, you know, one of the things is learning how to do what you do well and finding where the opportunity is that allows you outsized returns given the risk compared to other things that you could be investing in. And I will say this, my partners in Texas started to do more development before I did. And so I was doing mostly value add and buy and hold, but I hadn't done development. And so my partners that were developing you know, already had a really good pipeline and we're really looking for path of progress markets where it was undersupplied. I'll give you an example, just a small example. Texas Instruments and Elon Musk and Amazon decided to build warehouse outside of Austin and outside of Dallas. Okay. So you have all these big jobs that are coming, building big warehouses in suburbs far enough out that it's not quite suburban Dallas or Austin, but just a little further where there's no housing.
No supply.
So when you know you're going to have 6,000 new employees or 10,000 new employees in 2 years and there's no multifamily, well, you're going to need, people are going to want to live right there, right? So we look at path of progress markets right outside big cities where there is growth and we know jobs are coming. buy up the land and then start developing. Now, the process started in 2022, and lending dried up. So we have projects, to be fair, that had letters in hand of pre-approval. Come, we'll give you the money, $100 million deals, brand new 400-unit apartment buildings. Yeah. And then the lenders, because of banking crisis last year, said, wait a second. Many people don't know, when I go to a bank, a regional bank, and they tell me they'll give me a $100 million loan, it's not all their money. They're co-brokering it, if you will. Yeah. So it's kind of like reinsurance and insurance. They might go to four other banks or funds and say, each give us $25 million. We're going to be the face of this loan. Well, a lot of lenders had to stop lending. So they said, we're pencils down. We love you. We love your project, but we can't do it right now. We need you to wait, or we'll do it for 50% LTV instead of 80. Yeah. So not only were rates going up.
We'll charge you a higher interest rate too, by the way.
Oh yeah. Some went from 5 to 9, 10, 11 and 80% to 55%. We always got to think about, how can we pivot when things change, right? We're not just going to stop doing these great projects. What do we do? So we believed in the projects. We believe in the locations. Timing may be off for some, but what we did is we started looking at 40-year financing on this deal that we're currently developing just outside of Dallas in Lake Dallas, Texas. And so we went to HUD and we got a welcome approval, pre-approval letter that took about a year of working with them to get the invitation to build, where we get HUD fixed 40-year financing at really good rates and at a good LTV. And so that, you know, takes out some of the questions about, you know, short-term, long-term, where cap rates and value is going to be, et cetera. It allows us to build with a really conservative, really great loan. And we're still, you know, bringing those opportunities to our investors. The plus side is that we'll have not only bonus depreciation, but we'll also have tax credits on those things, which really help investors on a post-tax standpoint. We'll have a Class A asset in one of the only really good multifamily new assets in a really strong Path of Progress market.
And even though real estate in certain markets is overbuilt, real estate is so local. Like you said, this Path of Progress, there's a lot going on this little area or big area, whatever, but this area, there's a lot going on where building makes sense. Now, you building in a specific other submarket of Dallas may not make sense. Another submarket in Austin, Texas probably doesn't make sense, right?
Absolutely.
Phoenix, Arizona is way overbuilt. Well, I guarantee you there's spots in Phoenix where building makes sense, but there's a lot of other spots where you should just don't build because there's too much happening.
Absolutely. So I just came back from Arizona and I went and visited a property. I'm an LP on a deal, so I didn't GP it. But it's in an area where there are a lot of new companies coming in to manufacture, kind of part of the reshoring. So that's another big opportunity is with all this global stuff happening, the U.S. as a matter of national security is reshoring a lot of jobs and manufacturing of things like microchips and semiconductors and things like that. That, you know, those warehouses are being built, those jobs are coming, and a lot of times they're going to markets like Phoenix with a low tax model, or like, you know, Dallas or parts of Austin. But these smaller towns outside of the big city, just on the outskirts, they're actually doing a lot to incentivize companies to bring people there, giving tax abatements and things like that. So where the companies go for all this opportunity and reshoring, employees come. And where those employees come, you need housing. And so if they're going to these smaller markets to get better incentives to build there rather than right in the smack downtown Dallas or downtown Austin, you've got opportunity there where it is undersupplied in that small market just outside of the major MSA. So I'm definitely thinking about those things as I invest, both actively and passively, is look at the market, look where the jobs are going, and local economies that have a really strong GDP, like Texas does. Texas has a stronger it's the eighth strongest GDP in the entire world, the GDP of Texas.
That's so crazy.
So, yeah.
That's wild. Well, Anna, look, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. Your wealth of knowledge. I knew this was going to be a great episode. You definitely delivered on that. And probably going to end up being two episodes, by the way, because, you know, there's just so much good content. And I really appreciate your time and spending it with us. How can our listeners get in touch with you, learn about what you got going on? I know you do some coaching, you take on LP investors. There's, you know, you're obviously just willing to share and to help out. So how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Thank you so much. You can find me at my website, which is annakellyinvesting.com, where you can find out information on both investing passively, coaching, and also deal review consulting. And I just thank you so much again for having me on your show. It's always fun to talk to you and to catch up. And I've really enjoyed my time with you today.
Awesome. Have a fantastic rest of the day. Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you being a loyal listener. Say, I would love to have you go on to our Facebook page and subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Go on to iTunes or wherever you listen and give us a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe. Your rating and review just helps us push this out to more and more people and continue to grow our audience and hopefully positively affect a ton of people out there that really need this and want this. So the other thing I've got for you is a free ebook on my website. So go on to venturedproperties.com, venturedproperties.com, and download our free ebook on real estate and on syndication. And I've got some data points in there, some really good stuff for you. So I'd love to have you take a look at that. It's free. I'm not expecting anything from it. And also, look, if you want some help in multifamily, want some help learning, growing, getting your business off the ground, I would love to talk to you about what it would look like to work with me potentially and see if that's a good fit. So you can go to coachwithdex.com and check that out, and we can definitely have a call. Thanks a lot for listening. You make it a fantastic rest of the day. I'll catch you on the next episode.